So let me give you a little bit of background. This is a topic that I think was extremely timely several months ago, but due to unfortunate circumstances, we haven't been able to get started yet. So this presentation was to give you some information on how we were able to implement meaningful use data elements with a collaborating health department. And we're still waiting to get started. But what we've done is we've expanded that into another area that Dr. Seth Foley talked about this morning, is how can you take advantage of the technology to do more with less. And this topic started as a result of the ISDS committee making recommendations on the meaningful use data elements. I was approached by several people. One of the things that we do at Johns Hopkins APL is develop and support the disease surveillance system known as ESSENCE. And many of the state and local health departments have invested a fair amount of effort in collecting data from their hospitals, from other data sources, and now with meaningful use and with moving towards a new data format in HL7, this would present a challenge because people now have to change. It's great from the standpoint of now there's going to be standardization as to what you'll receive, but if you've already invested an awful lot of energy in standing up a system and receiving a lot of data, it's a disruption. So the original project was to demonstrate how easily it could be to modify your disease surveillance system to accept those meaningful use data elements. And it morphed into something more, and we'll talk a little bit about that. So why don't I see if I can move forward. So the background to this is the ONC incentive, and there's the core processes, which is an ISDS document, and then there's the FIN messaging guide. But what we're really faced with are all these health department budget constraints. So our focus for this project, and even though we thought about it a lot and haven't got started, is really how can one absorb this opportunity with all of this data that's now available. And the second component to that was, well, with budget constraints looming and with people being able now forced with maybe not having the IT resources that they used to have, is there some way we could take advantage of cloud computing and the offer that the BioSense redesign team was to put ESSENCE in the cloud and potentially have that available to health departments to use so they wouldn't have to host it on their own machines. So there's two pronged. One, you can consume the meaningful use data elements, but then two, have it in the cloud so you don't have to pay for the continuing resources that are needed. So this seems really kind of neat. So the next couple of these are just the documents if you haven't seen those, and if you're interested in meaningful use and how to implement that, you can get a hold of that. But what we have is two sides of a what I call a funnel. One side is incentive side, where ONC and CMS have made these incentives to healthcare providers to and organizations to provide this data. And on the other side, you have the mechanisms with ISDS and the FIN messaging and now with BioSense redesign to permit these type of applications within the redesign cloud. But really what this happens is you now have if you're a health department and you're struggling with trying to do your surveillance, now you potentially have a lot more data sources available to you because it's not just hospital emergency departments, it's physician practice associations, inpatient data, and all kinds of data could be available under meaningful use and will be available under meaningful use. And you have these budget constraints, which are the realities, and how do you don't want to not take advantage of this opportunity, but the question for many is, how do you really do that with a budget constraint? And so I think in the next few slides, we're going to try to answer at least one approach. But I think what we're going to also do is we're going to raise a lot of questions. and issues as to how this works. What we were hoping to do is come in with, I've solved this problem, I've solved that problem, you can't send your data to the cloud, that's an issue. I've got more data than the cloud will accept, you know, in certain formats. There's all kinds of issues, but we're hoping to stimulate, you know, discussion enough such that, you know, we will have a better direction when we get started. And then if you're interested in helping us, you can give us a call, you can contact us. So the next person I wanted to introduce he'll be our cloud implementer. He's our chief implementer for Essence, and it's Wayne Leshen. Wayne's got computer science degrees from University of Illinois in Champaign and from Johns Hopkins, and he's been one of the driving forces between implementing things, and he's been studying up on the cloud. So he's trying to figure out what you can do in the cloud, you know, what this BioSense catcher's mitt's going to be, you know, and how can you really utilize the concept? Now, the concept may morph into something that's more practical, more, you know, implementable, but I think we're all here to try to figure this out and walk through this and learn so what we do implement makes sense and can be used by health departments. So, Wayne.
So, I guess I'm going to start this by just asking a raise of hands. Who's familiar with meaningful use? All right, so that's pretty good. Most everybody's got that part down. So obviously there's a couple parts of meaningful use. We're mostly talking about the syndromic surveillance aspects of meaningful use. Who's sort of looked into all the data elements of meaningful use? All right, a few less people. That's good. So what we do in Essence, who's familiar with Essence? Much less. Okay. So Essence, being a disease surveillance system, has been used to, over the past 10, 11, 12 years, collecting data elements and trying to provide them back to users from both a detection analysis standpoint, looking for anomalies, but also just from an informational system capability, so users can query for whatever they want. So a lot of that has to do with what data elements you can get into the system. Standard stuff, demographics of the patient, basic chief complaint level information that we categorize using natural language processing into syndromic bins. Over the years, the syndromic aspect of it has adapted or sort of fallen off a little bit, and people are much more interested in developing case definition-based queries, much more detail-oriented. They also love the ability to do free text queries to look for event-based stuff. So, for example, during Katrina, people were having their nurse triage folks put the word Katrina in a chief complaint. Haiti, the same thing. During H1N1, they were looking for the words like Mexico or travel. So having that free text ability for a system that wasn't designed to do this, but has the ability to kind of sift through massive amounts of data and look for those real interesting case definitions. So with meaningful use, what starts occurring? Oh, question.
I'm sorry to interrupt. No. Do you think you can find a way to turn the microphone on?
I think it's on. It's just really, really quiet. Yeah, so I'll sit here and talk like this all day. There's a whole bunch of controls back there, but I'm not going to try. Maybe I'll just try and talk louder. So with all the new data elements, it becomes a lot of data, but it also can overburden folks sometimes. So if you start going through the meaningful use, in addition to basic demographic information and things we sort of already had in Essence, this is a list of basically all the new fields that people might get. Additional dates are sometimes important, additional diagnosis information. I think some of the very interesting ones include temperature and pulse oximetry, pregnancy status, and then the triage notes, which some folks like North Carolina, for example, have been using for a while. But we actually hadn't had any sites who had access to that data before. Vital sign information and temperature. Highest temperature and initial temperature. So you'll notice that there's also some calculation fields. So based off some previous experience we've had working with the DoD data, we knew that while somebody might have a temperature field that's free text, they don't always write the same thing. So somebody may put in Celsius, somebody else may put in Fahrenheit, somebody else may put in Kelvin, I don't know. It could be anything. So we try to set up a secondary field where we take our at least best guess at calculating that into a standard format. So that way when you do perform queries, you don't start grabbing people who are 20 degrees cold. So there are a few parts of meaningful use that are still yet to be defined. A lot of the laboratory order data sets and laboratory result data sets are in the extended parts of meaningful use, and I don't think they have quite been defined yet, so we've just put placeholders in for now. And I mentioned the triage notes. So triage notes, if you're not familiar with it, are a paragraph of text like a chief complaint, but with a lot more verbose. What this means is the chief complaint parser itself may slightly be different, and the way we're going to go ahead and treat it is similar to a chief complaint where we map it into these syndromic bins. So you end up with a one-to-many relationship, and what I mean by that is you have one patient, but they might end up in many syndromes or subsyndromic bins, and that ended up causing us a problem. Maybe I'll show that. Yeah. So, like I just mentioned, so we created a new triage note processor for ourselves. It was very similar to our chief complaint processor, but with a few tweaks based on kind of going through a limited data set that we had. The biggest one was negation. In a chief complaint processor, you can sort of look one word ahead. This person did not have fever, that sort of stuff. In a full paragraph of text, however, it gets a lot more complicated. People are a lot more verbose. So negation, it gets a little more complicated. That's pretty much the big change from that side. We could go on and on from the NLP side, but that wasn't my area, so I'm going to skip that part. On the other hand, the database alterations changed quite a bit. So if anybody's heard me talk about Essence before in the past, we tried to keep a very flat, non-normalized data structure for speed purposes. Some of these sites have hundreds of gigabytes of data, and being able to query them, you know, in less than a couple seconds from a user screen is a challenge. But by doing some finagling, you know, increasing the space but decreasing the time to wait for users, we've been able to do that pretty good over the years. The addition of the new nurse triage note categories changed that a little bit. So now, you know, Bob, as he comes into the hospital, can get categorized into three or four syndromes, you know, five or six sub-syndromes from the chief complaint, but also can get categorized in a whole handful of triage note sub-syndromes and syndromes now. So if we were to keep that in a very flat table structure, Bob may be in the database now, you know, 30, 40, 50 times, which is bad. It's unfortunate. So instead, we actually, for the first time, had to adjust the under-the-hood system of Essence to build what we call join-on-the-flies, or a lot more complicated querying system to try and keep the speed, but at the same time not overburden the databases, because it can just be too much data if you try and replicate or duplicate the same person over and over again for speed purposes. So that was a fairly fundamental change of ours. So this is now implemented. The Oregon Department of Health, we just did an install of Essence with this capability. It was a blind install. They don't have these data sets flowing yet. So when Joe talked about, you know, we were hoping to have a whole lot more stuff done by now, we actually have a system of Essence that's installed that does this. We have no idea if it works or not, because they don't have the data to put into it to see if it works yet or not. So we're making some hopes and guesses at this, but in order to even get it out the door, we did have to make quite a few changes. Okay, so then Joe mentioned the next buzzword, which is cloud. How many people know what a cloud is? Yeah, right. No, really. So what I've learned, and you can read this if you want, but this means so many different things to so many different people. It's not even funny. I think the Oracle president came out and basically said, everybody already has clouds, they just don't know it yet, and just, you know, change the name and sell $1 million worth of stuff. Look at this if you want. Go ahead, it's fine. I don't like this. Okay, so this is my version to simplify this. So number one, you know, first there was a computer. Yay. So then we started making these things called virtual machines. And so the concept of the virtual machine is that you can take portions of a machine and turn it into what looks to the user like a single computer. But really under the hood, it may be a quarter of a real machine. It may be bits and pieces from 10 machines pulled together. It really doesn't matter, but it's just a fake. It looks like a single computer to a real user. The cloud is basically, in my mind, just the ability to create those virtual machines on the fly dynamically without having to call up, Jim down in IT and say, can you set me up a virtual machine? Instead, you can go to an Amazon web page, click a button that says, yeah, I'd kind of like to have 8 CPUs and 10 gigs of RAM, and yeah, okay, I'll take SQL Server already installed, click. And now I've got that computer there. And that's what the cloud basically is. Now, you can get a whole lot more complicated here, and we can start talking about, well, does it come bare bones, like a computer just out of the box, or does it come with a whole bunch of software installed on it ahead of time? And that's when you start getting complicated. But for the bare minimum, this is basically what the cloud is. So what does that actually do for you? I mean, how does that help you a whole lot? Well, the trick is in that automation step. So if I gave you a bare computer, it's still a whole lot of work to get SAS installed and to get your data loaded onto it and to get the things that you actually need to set up all the connections to hook it up to the network. However, if I've got automated scripts where I can click a button and have Essence installed, and you've already told me that you want to be in this part of the world, and the system already knows that the big database in the sky is located over here, well, now in a matter of a second, I can actually spin up a whole new instance of Essence that you can use in your location. And whereas before, let's say you've got this running on 2 or 3 machines back in your local IT office, and that's great for your 50 users, but if all of a sudden SARS hits or Katrina hits or some big thing happens, H1N1, and now you've got your entire state trying to get into this thing, it just can't handle the load. But if you can click a button and spin up 10 of them, now we can see where the power of the cloud comes in. So it's a lot about automation of existing things we already have. It's not revolutionary new stuff. It's just taking the time to build the install scripts and make them without a human in the loop, for the most part. Somebody can throw knives. There's all sorts of other definitions for other purposes, but this is what I'm sticking with for today. So when you start talking about surveillance in the cloud, again, one of the big things is, what resources do you have to have in order to even stand up a surveillance system? For the most part, it's not much. We've installed Essence on a single box before. We've installed Essence on 5 or 6 machines before. It all depends on how fast your data is coming in, how many users are using the system. But it still requires a box sitting in your IT, in your shop someplace. And there are some places, unfortunately, where their agreements with their IT support staff are such that, it may cost $150,000 a year just to have a machine sitting there. I could buy a new one every time Windows releases a patch. Why would I have to pay that much? But that's how this works. So getting that support for the hardware out from your IT shop and to someplace in the cloud seems very attractive to some folks. There are levels where if you are paying Amazon 4 cents an hour for a computer, okay, that doesn't sound like a whole awful lot until you start using 10 computers and 20 computers, and you do that for a year. So there is a cost analysis you sort of have to do to compare to what you have in your own shop. But if your own shop is charging you $800,000 a year to run those 5 machines, it's pretty easy to break even on Amazon no matter what you're running on. But you still have to be able to do it. Another big benefit is just having capability out there that is, in this case, having these applications installed. So if you think of it like sort of a Chinese menu to a certain extent, you go to the Amazon cloud and could click a button that says, yeah, I'd like Essence, I'd like SAS, I'd like BioSense, I'd like this, I'd like that. Click a button and boom, now your little instance of a computer spins up with all these things pre-ready to go for you. That's a pretty powerful tool. The other nice part about that, and I think we'll talk about it later, is if you keep that version of Essence up to date, or SAS or whatever, now anytime you want to, you can spin a new one of these things up with the latest and greatest. You don't have to worry about, especially from our perspective, going to every single little public health department and upgrading them to the latest and greatest individually. I can do that on a server one time, and the next time you get around to it, you'll get the best. The other nice part about this is it does kind of centralize things a touch, and so if you want them to, so that you can have things like a national collaborative area like the BioSense redesign. Wow, we could have been here 2 years ago talking about the grid and how we weren't going to centralize anything, and now we're talking about a cloud where you are sort of centralizing everything. So these things change pretty quickly. But, I mean, you can see it does have some benefits if you can get over some of the limitations. So our concept, if you can read that over there, basically it's the concept here from the BioSense redesign side is that they'll have this catcher's mitt, this gigantic archive, where if you can get your data into the BioSense site, you know, it can be put into the cloud. How are you going to do that? Well, you either probably already have the capability with a Rhapsody system, for example, to translate those HL7 messages or pass those HL7 messages up to the BioSense site. Or there's open source tools like MIRTH, where we're hoping to, as part of this project, build the modules and be able to pass those out to folks so that you can use open source tools to do the same thing. Excuse me. As far as the transport side goes, it's pretty flexible. I mean, you can use FinMS, you can use SFTP. There's probably going to be hundreds of other ways to transport this thing around. I think I heard of one called Connect once upon a time. Once the data is in the cloud, then what can you do with it? Well, so this is the part that's still being worked out, and we have some thoughts of what this should do, but we'll wait and see. My assumption is that you as a state or local administrator are going to have the ability to put some access control and security constraints on your data. Who can see this? Who can't see this? So while the data is a little bit more centralized than it would have been if it was sitting behind my own firewall, the hope is that you still, though, have the control to give it to who you need to. Then you have the Essence Instance Builder, which now we're back to the Chinese menu concept. Hopefully you'll have that web page where you can click and say, I'd like an instance of Essence brought up that's got X, Y, and Z, this syndrome definition, this geographic unit. I'd like it to be blue or green or pink. I don't care. You know, and so you choose your options, click a button, and it spins up that Essence instance for you. The demonstration case for this is going to be Tarrant County Public Health because they already have their data up in the cloud, and the BioSense redesign team is using it right now for their test as well. So what this does get you is the concept of, like we said, one of the benefits of the cloud is multiple instancing. And so this picture doesn't show it, but you can also have the concept of multiple instancing even within a single place. So if all of a sudden H1N1 happens and you need 250 users to happen to, you know, start hitting this thing at the drop of the hat, it shouldn't be hard to spin up 3 more or 10 more or 50 more. All right. So we're reducing the state and local IT infrastructure that you have to have. We're reducing your need to purchase software. For example, every time you install Essence in your local system, you have to have SQL Server. Right now, that's about the only pay-for piece of software you have to have. But if you don't have it, it's an expense. Other tools, SaaS, you can imagine the same sort of thing exists. You don't have to buy these very big expensive tools if you can just go log into a web page and utilize them remotely. You can also access the latest tools and latest upgrades. We mentioned that before. One thing I didn't put on here is analytical power. If you can only afford a fairly modest laptop or small machine to run some of these things on, but now all of a sudden you can log into Amazon, and let's say you only need it for 8 hours, but you can spin up something in the cloud, run it for 8 hours, and be done with it, as opposed to it running on your desktop in your back room for 2 weeks. That's pretty powerful, and it may be worth the whatever that is, 47 cents or whatever it's going to cost you to use that resource for the day. They have a lot of machine horsepower, and sometimes you need that sort of stuff. All right, so the disadvantages, though, you may not be able to send your data there. That's the first one right off the bat. I mean, that's the first non-starter. If you can't send your data outside, then this doesn't help you at all. Yeah, you could build your own little cloud, but you know, you're still paying for everything, and sort of pretty much everything we've talked about here goes away. The only way that benefits you is if you can work with other organizations within your state or jurisdiction so that maybe you can all pool resources together and work with the other 25 or 50 different components within your organization and build your own little mini cloud. But, you know, more than likely you still lose some of the benefits of having an Amazon or somebody else sitting out there where you can spin it up across 1,000 computers. We're trying to get around that in some cases. I know Florida has a weird law, for example, that says that the data can't go outside the state boundaries. The nice thing about some of these bigger, yeah, isn't that funny? The nice things about working with somebody like Amazon, which I keep saying that just because that's who the BioSense redesign team picked, they have enough computers and enough data centers that you actually can firewall off a chunk of the cloud and say, we're going to run one of these in an instance that we're guaranteed to be in Florida. So that gets around some of those loopholes. Amazon's also HIPAA compliant or HIPAA certified or HIPAA something or other. I don't know. That's what I was told. So hopefully that eases some of the other concerns that you'd have to have. So it is possible to get around some of these things. I think that's going to be something we're just going to have to see as we go, though. Everybody's going to have their own rules because the lawyers are the only ones that ever make any money off this. Right now, at least for this initial version, we're focusing on meaningful use data in the cloud. There's not been any talk about additional data sets. And one of the huge benefits of Essence right now is that folks put other types of data in the system, vital statistics, reportable disease data, dog and cat data, you name it. And so they like being able to merge all these different data sources and see a unified picture. This cloud instance, I don't think, is going to have that off the bat. It may get there someday, but we'll see. The other issue, I guess, is like I mentioned before, the cloud isn't free. I mean, you still have to pay for these instances as you're spinning them up. And so a part of the research we've got to figure out going forward, and probably pretty quickly, is how do we architect a system like Essence in the cloud so that it doesn't cost a lot of money to do it? For instance, you may be able to spin up 3 instances, but we might share a single database instance on the back end to do that. That saves us from having to add 9 more machines on the back end, for example. We can sort of pool our resources and then monitor those resources. And if they start seeming to be dragged down a little bit, okay, then you spin up another instance. You don't do it just out of habit like we would have if we were doing it at every jurisdiction installing their own. There's a lot of that stuff we're going to have to learn. All right, so that was what I had. Anything else?
No, I think there's a lot of issues
that needed
to be addressed and a lot of challenges, and hopefully in the near future we'll come up with solutions that will be able to address some of the challenges.
Yeah, Joseph's saying that he's just reiterating that, you know, this, there's a lot of questions here. We don't know them all yet. I mean, we haven't even played with the cloud yet other than just stuff back home. So we'll figure that out as we go along. But it has the potential to save some people who are, especially those folks who are getting just gouged by their IT groups back in their local jurisdiction. If they can move that capability someplace else and can legally put their data someplace else, it's going to benefit them an amazing amount.
Yeah, the other aspect of it is low resource settings where, you know, in international settings, which folks really don't have any capability at all, having something in a cloud like this might really be the only way that they may be able to afford to do surveillance of this type of solution.
Yeah, so I'll repeat that through the mic. So in a low resource settings, the cloud may potentially be useful. The benefit there is that you have, again, this ability to do a lot of computation on the back end to look for anomalies and slice and dice through data. The downside about a cloud is that you do have to have networking capabilities to get your data to it and to get the information out of it. So if you're sitting on a cell phone, yeah, you might be able to see a picture or two, but it's going to be hard to get a ton of data in and out of it. So it still isn't perfect. If you're a public health department using a 56K modem and you've got 1 terabyte of meaningful use data, sorry, this isn't going to help you. Not very much, unless you're going to, you know, package up a hard drive every couple of months and send it to somebody who can upload it to Amazon for you, which is possible.
Do you think over the years that we've been looking at this through with surveillance, there's been a change in the understanding of what the use cases really are. I mean, we're still seem to be focusing on collecting a bunch of data, but what is it actually for? Has that changed?
So the question was about sort of syndromic surveillance in general, and what are the collecting all this data, and whether you think that's going to change over time. I was told to repeat all the questions. So yeah, all right. So yes, I mean it's already changed once. I mean in a pretty dramatic shift, it went from being syndromic bins, and everybody arguing about whether asthma should be in respiratory or not, to being able to query, symptom level subsyndromes and free text queries already to do case definitions. So I think that's already happened. Above and beyond that, the argument about whether or not you should include this field or not include that field, well, there's a lot of people that just say, give me it all. If I can hold it all and I can find a way to do it, I might need it someday and I'd rather have it than not. You've got that concept is going to run up against, I can't afford to keep it all. And that's eventually where that's going to stop. But there's a lot of times where people don't think that field's very useful, and then all of a sudden something happens and they're like, okay, that's the most important field I have now. It's tough to give that away now. Plus, I mean, who's tried to go get data from hospitals before? At least in the past, it was like pulling teeth. So if you asked for it now, you better do it because this may be your only chance to get it. And I think people are going to have that memory for a long time and are going to be hesitant to just say, oh, I'll only ask for a little now and I'll ask for more later, because they may not be a later. So they get it now while they can.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what the relationship is in your architecture to state health information exchanges. So are you're going directly to hospital data, or are you thinking that there's some role for the cloud with the state HIEs that are already being funded?
Good question. So where is the data coming from and who's going to give it to us? The picture is oversimplified. Basically, it's however the local public health department wants to get the data to the cloud, they can do it. So if it's a combination of these three hospitals directly because that's the only way we could support them, but these, the rest of them we're going to funnel through, an export out of our local system we already have, and these six are going to come from this HIE, I don't think it matters. That the one benefit among some that the meaningful use stuff has is it has sort of standardized HL7231, HL7251, which isn't a standard, but that's a whole nother discussion for another day. But at least it's that, so we can at least start there and send that stuff up. So I don't care where it comes from or if it comes from 10 different places or one. We're used to dealing with real-time data that is spotty from some people and not from others, so Essence already can handle that. Hopefully biosensory design will be able to handle the same concept. I imagine the data archive isn't going to care one way or the other. So once the data gets in, we'll process it as fast as we can and get the screens back to the users.
Yeah, it's just more from a population goal standpoint of coverage, knowing that you could get to a certain...
we run into that too. When you're running algorithms and you're trying to compare apples to apples versus, 25% of your data today versus the... It's funny with the DoD data and the in the past that we've done a lot of work with. I mean, that happens even with one data source where, it's claims-based ICD-9 data that may filter in over the next 20 years. So you hope to get 20% the first day and 60% by the fifth day. And, we've sort of already had to deal with some of that issues. Most of the folks in the ER side of the house haven't had to deal with that. They get their data by, 11 o'clock this morning should be the last hospital of the day, and then after that I'm good. So it may be a little bit of a different world for them, but on the other hand, it may actually be the other way around if you get some more of these real-time hospitals where, wait a second, you mean I don't have to wait till 2 o'clock to have all my detections run? I can have them ready to go at 6? Yeah, that may happen too.
Has it been decided about which surveillance data would be in the cloud in this Tarrant County?
I don't know what they've already uploaded. I think...
So, the original concept...
Here, come up here and talk into the mic. The question was which data from Tarrant County?
Yeah, they wanted to do a Physicians Practice Association because the Physicians Practice Association really wanted to give them the meaningful use data to qualify for the incentive. And what BioSense Redesign would like to do to start with is ED data. So we're going to start with ED data, but knowing that there's other data streams out there that people are really pushing hard to get in as well. Yeah, Dave.
Is the Tarrant County, is this like a time-limited test that you write up, or is this just the first of a start and others will follow? Or
I think it's supposed to be the first of a start and others will follow, but there's obviously going to be some type of an evaluation of how well this is working.
Yeah.
So we'll
Taha has mentioned November over and over and over again.
But it's...
We'll see how that works.
It's August.
It's a great group to start with. I mean,
yeah.
Really great.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay. Any more questions?
Joe, in terms of where Essen stands today, how much of that needs to be re-architected to leverage...
So the question is, how much of Essen has to be re-architected? The answer is, if we had a lot of money, none. Yeah, why do you need money? So, and this is the part where we have to figure out what the boundaries are. I mean, if I had the power to say for every instance I can spin up 5 VMs from Amazon and I can run Essence as it is today, this literally may take a couple hours to do. I don't think that's going to be the case. I have a feeling they have a budget that's going to say stuff like, well, we really only want you to have 6 machines for everybody in the country or something crazy like that. And I just don't know what those constraints are yet. Once we find those constraints, we'll know how much re-architecting we're going to have. The instance builder will have to be new. Working with whatever access control they finally define for us will be a little bit new, but not too crazy. We have tons of access control on our side. But, you know, building an install script that pairs the United States shapefile down to just the region they're interested in, you know, that's not going to take too much to do. It won't require too much re-architecting. But so let me go back and look.
I just didn't see it. Are they taking considerations for the ICD-9 to 10 conversion from 2013?
Is it there? There is diagnosis. Oh, we already have a diagnosis in Essence. It's a free text field. So it gives the users the ability to search for any string they want, is the way we do it right now, basically because every hospital does it differently. Once we start seeing some of these data fields over time, we may adapt some of that and change it a little bit. If it starts getting consistent on ICD-10 or 9, doesn't matter, then we can then map that out and make it a little easier for people to get to, at least with pull-downs and such. But at least as of right now, it hasn't been consistent anywhere, so we've sort of not done that. A lot of hospitals don't do it at all. Some people put in just free text. Welcome to HL7 being a standard. You know.
But ICD-9 isn't necessarily a final diagnosis.
They're billing codes. They're not necessarily final diagnosis. Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.